Of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Thursday, January 18, 2024. And I'm joined by my special guest, Jeremy in Kentucky. And I was on In Plain Sight, your broadcast last night. You obviously, as I said during the first hour, I just think everybody knows, but you're on from 9 to 10 Central, Monday through Thursday, In Plain Sight with Jeremy from Kentucky. And I think we always have interesting discussions, things that are very, I don't know, maybe the best way to say it is unorthodox, but they're not in those well-worn grooves of the usual kind of stuff.
Right, right. And I had just another point to make before we get off the war stuff. It's mm-hmm. interesting to see the left and the right support of war. It was very fascinating to see the leftists were totally supporting the Ukraine Russia thing. In other words, they were anti-Russia. Yeah. But a lot of the mega Trump people rejected it. I mean, some of them were at first, you know, jumping on board, but really quick they jumped off.
Yeah.
And I noticed that too, that the hardcore Trump supporters from early on in 2015 were also kind of pro-Russia. Mm-hmm. You know, they saw Russia as a Christian nation. And look, Putin has done a lot of good for the people there. Who knows what his real motivations are or who's behind him. But to just lionize them, I think, I think that's a mistake. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, the left is now against this, you know, Israel genociding Palestine. You know, they're against that, but the right is supporting it.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating to me. So in other words, the system is getting both left and right support.
Yeah. Yeah,
for these wars, it's the same thing as we were talking about the Vivek supporters and the Trump supporters.
Yeah,
they sort of get out there and fish, and they draw them all in.
Yeah,
I just want to make that
it
point.
It really is. I feel like maybe I should grab my copy of Hayek's Road to Serfdom real quick and just basically just read through chapter 10. Probably a thing to do again. I read through a significant portion of it back in 2016. In the run up to the elections, I feel like that's where we are again, because it's that language, it's that jingoistic language that gets people stirred up, and the guy who says, you know, I'm strong enough to get things done, and they just totally, you know, the three reasons that Hayek lists, it's the lowest common denominator stuff, those whose those whose views are vaguely and imperfectly formed, who will become the the mob of the demagoguery, and last but not least, it's the uniting people on some negative program, which frees the guy up from any positive thing. He doesn't have to say a positive thing, and you know, no one's worse about the we have to defeat than Joe Biden. He doesn't have anything else, but Donald Trump does that too. And so it's textbook Hayek's Road to Serfdom, chapter 10. And if everybody would just read that one chapter, I think you could see it on both sides, the entire political spectrum. And everything else, I think, beyond that sort of Machiavellian game plan, I think everything else is kind of PR window dressing, quite frankly.
And what astonishes me is the elites, specifically, you know, Nuland and Blinken are so, I mean, they're going so strong on both fronts with, war against Russia, war against Iran. You know, they're supporting both wars,
mm-hmm.
right? Whereas the left and the right are supporting different ones, but it all is kind of coming to the same thing. It kind of does go back to this thing with the Jews in Russia. I think the best way to understand that is to read Solzhenitsyn's 200 Years Together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Nuland and Blinken of the Synagogue of Satan seem to have this bone to pick.
Mm-hmm.
And they're driving full steam ahead with no off-ramp. And it's like they're on a kamikaze mission. And I think it will result in one side of this power grid falling down. We mentioned the West is America and NATO, and the East is Russia and China and the BRICS.
Yeah.
One side's going to collapse, and I think it's going to be the West. And this was all written about in Alexander Dugin's writings. He actually predicted, infiltrated the right to make a lot of this happen. Who knows?
You know, and that reminds me, the last time, I don't know if it was the last time we were, which broadcast was it, the last one, you mentioned Dugin, and I had some thoughts that we were out of time, and he's an interesting guy. Speaking of the magical, mystical American history, he's right in sort of lockstep with that. I mean, people can search, for example, Alexander Dugin, Aleister Crowley. There was a piece by James Carley back in 2017, a HuffPost piece titled Alexander Dugin, the Russian Mystic Behind America's Weird Far Right. And so, you know, it's the same old forces that are very anti-Christian, by the way. Very magical, mystical, alchemical kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was, when you're talking about our second hour, you would come on my show on a Wednesday night, and with Mike had technical difficulties, he couldn't get us off the air, and we just stayed on for another hour.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when we covered it. Dugin's fourth political theory, which basically combines all of these, fascism, communism, kind of combines it all into this one. And a lot of the people on the alt-right, I think, were infiltrated by this. I think the creation of the alt-right was due to this particular ideology. I mean, you had Richard Spencer, mm-hmm. who claimed to be pro-white European, translating all of Dugin's works. One of his wives did. Mm-hmm. And he was a big Dugin person. But yet, Dugin supports this Eurasian blending of the ethnicity, something that someone that's pro-white should be against.
Yeah.
But yet they, they either overlooked it or they're subversive. And this whole thing also dovetailed with the pro-Russia narrative in the alt-right. Again, I know Putin and Russia have done a lot of good things, and they're probably the lesser of the two evils, but I saw it happen in real time as I got into this, what's activism? I don't even want to call it that.
Yeah. Awareness?
The study of political theory, yeah.
Awareness, maybe? So,
I got caught up in it. I got caught up in it too, and I had to step back and say, whoa.
Yeah.
And the Bible was the guide.
Yeah. So, from the Alexander Dugin Wikipedia entry, and Wikipedia is not the oracle. Wikipedia is a whitewashed, sanitized version. So if this is what's on Wikipedia, then, draw your own conclusion. Anyway, right from Wikipedia, born into a military intelligence family, Dugin was an anti-communist, wink, wink, dissident during the 1980s. Following the dissolution, it's always funny how communists are fighting over, who's more communist. Anyway, following the dissolution of the Soviet Union, Dugin co-founded the National Bolshevik Party with Edward Limonov, a party which espoused National Bolshevism, which he later left, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see, where do I jump in? Dugin continued to further develop his ideology of Neo-Eurasianism. I'm sure that Brzezinski would be proud. Founding the Eurasia Party in 2002, and so would Halford Mackinder, by the way. Anyway, Eurasia Party in 2002, and writing further books, including The Fourth Political Theory, like you said, in 2009. His political views have been characterized as fascist or neo-fascist. That's just Wikipedia. So, and the truth is that it's much more, So early life and education. Dugin was born in Moscow into the family of a colonel general in the GRU, Soviet Military Intelligence Agency. And on and on, on and on. Anyway, how about this? In 1980, Dugin joined the Yuzinski Circle, an avant-garde dissident group which dabbled in Satanism, esoteric Nazism, and other forms of the occult.
You have these ties to, I think it's Chabad Lubavitch in Russia.
Yeah. Yep.
That had set up basically Jared Kushner and Trump's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then all of a sudden in 2013, you can see Donald Trump's tweets criticizing Obama, birther movement, and all that. And so there's, you know, we talk about Jewish power, those that call themselves Jews. I mean, there's a sliver that is in control of the right. You see this in the writings. The guy in 2001 that he was in the Center of Immigration Studies. He wrote the paper called The Jewish Stake in America's Changing Demography. And he basically was making the case to...
I want to say Sunstein, but it's not Sunstein.
It's a Steen, and I mention his name all the time. Let me get out what he was putting out, and I'll look his name up. But his basic theory was, number one, he openly admitted like the Jewish push for immigration, or third world immigration, and it was an open letter to his fellow Jews in power that was basically saying, look, you're doing this too fast. If you do this too fast, you're going to cause, number one, a white lash, and number two, a huge amount of anti-Semitism with all these Muslims you're wanting to bring over.
But that's and the idea.
Yeah, sure enough, what do we got? And, you know, the Muslims in Congress, we have the white lash in the form of the support for Donald Trump. All of these things that he warned about. Stephen Steinlight, mm-hmm. 2001, Center of Immigration Studies, the Jewish Stake in America's Changing Demography. That is an eye-opening letter. It's not a long read, and I would recommend that everybody read it. And it's kind of why that I speak out the way that I do against Jewish power. It's because they're openly admitting this stuff. And Europe's we're talking about like these fake Jews, not the real Israel of the Bible.
Of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and Jews will be resented because of our leading role.
Part of the winter spectrum. Yeah. And look, you don't have to hate these people coming in. I mean, I think that a lot of people that do get into white nationalism or just pro-white, you'd call it politics, they just want the America of the 1950s, and they kind of view things the way their grandfathers or great-grandfathers did. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to see white Europeans completely disappear, and that's where we're going. I mean, within 100 years, I would say.
Yeah, and it's all part of the plan. I mentioned last night in our after-show show, where is that? I included links to... there's that Metrocosm animated immigration map. It's the animation of everyone who's immigrated to the U.S. since 1820, and you can see. So you mentioned the Immigration Nationality Act of 1965, which made me think of this. And every time we start talking about this stuff, that comes to mind, because you can visualize, I mean, you can see with the animation where people are coming from until around the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, when suddenly there's a dramatic shift and people come from other places. And, you know, that does change things. And, I mean, this is a bigger discussion, but the next thing that I shared was the two pages out of the book The Prof, which is about Frederick Lindemann, who was, many people agree, Churchill's primary handler. And on page 261 and 262, you know, this high-powered guy in his biography. This is what his biographer, Roy Forbes Herod, writes. He writes, toward the end of his life, the prof, Frederick Lindemann, made a remark on more than one occasion with such an air of seriousness that he seemed to regard it as his testament of wisdom. And this gets back to my point about, you know, America being, you know, who's the new imperialist force colonizing the world? Well, we could maybe make an argument it's America, but I would say America is the glove, and it's usually British intrigue. When we look at the military stuff, you know, SAS is always around somewhere on the periphery. It's, you know, MI6 is always on the periphery. The BSC, the British Security Coordination, was involved in the creation of the OSS and CIA, et cetera, et cetera. So British intrigue is always there. I mean, speaking of Israel and Saudi Arabia, same thing. Anyway, continuing.
Yeah, so,
what's that?
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought you were kicking it. Go ahead.
I'm just going to finish the quote to your point. Toward the end of his life, the prof, Frederick Lindemann, made a remark on more than one occasion with an air of seriousness that he seemed to regard as his testament of wisdom. And I, that is Roy Forbes Herod, his biographer, accordingly feel it incumbent upon me to record it here, although not in perfect sympathy with it. Do you know, he asked, what the future historians will regard as the most important event of this age? Well, what is it? Herod says. It will not be Hitler and the Second World War. It will not be the release of nuclear energy. It will not be the menace of communism. These negatives seemed very comprehensive. He put on an expression of extreme severity and turned down the corners of his lips. It will be the abdication of the white man. Then he nodded his head up and down several times to drive his point, to drive home his proposition. And he goes on, Herod goes on, he says, this seemed to go against one's liberal sentiments. It occurred to me that this was but another example of the prof's remoteness and lack of fellow feeling with the mass of mankind, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, basically, it's happening. We got all of these documents that are put out. I'm not even going to name them. You know, I know that I think it's a weird thing. I want to, you know, maybe at some point we could talk about false flag stuff, because what we're talking about is a very specific kind of false flag where the people doing the things are always blaming others and making sure that they are presented as the victim. And then they telegraph these things in these documents that are put out, but they're discredited through certain authors. And the plan is out there in plain view, but anyone who talks about it, you know, is immediately marginalized because, no, that's proven a spurious document. So it's a very crazy kind of psyop. And the dynamics involved, but I think it's happening in a variety of ways. A lot of people talk about this. Anyway, maybe we'll talk more about it when we come back. Stick around, folks. More with my special guest Jeremy in Kentucky when we come back.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease-Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. with all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
We're changing our way, taking different roads. Love will tear us apart again. Love will tear us apart again. Why is the bedroom so cold?
Special guest, Jeremy in Kentucky. And we're just enjoying a little bit of the melodic tunes from Mike's playlist. So thank you for that. We temporarily lost Chris, so I'm just going to go on. We were talking about immigration in America, and specifically we mentioned the 1965 Immigration Act. Now, I've got a lot of thoughts I want to try to draw together, and hopefully we can get Chris back for comment. 1965 Immigration Act, this was to undo the national origins formula, the laws passed in the early 1920s in America. What they recognized was that it was hard enough to get all of the Irish, the Italians, and the Germans to integrate, even though they did share somewhat of a Christian culture, albeit you had Catholics and Protestants mixing in. But that was doable. What they were having trouble with was some of the Eastern Europeans coming in. So the National Origins Act was passed to try to limit and almost slow down immigration, right? And the 1965 Immigration Act did away with that, proposed by Senator Philip Hart, who was an Irishman, and Congressman Emanuel Seller, who claims Jewish ancestry. So you had, you know, the Irish and the Jews coming together on that one. But the 65 Act, as Chris pointed out, just totally opened the floodgates of, and you thought, you may think it was hard for the Europeans to integrate with each other in America. Now you're bringing in a lot of Asians from the Vietnam War, and now as we have done war in the Middle East, we're getting a lot of Muslims coming in, and again bringing it back to what Steinway said, he called it these flooding America with these people that are so different is going to cause both a white lash and an anti-Semitism lash. Now, I wanted to back up and sort of do a 40,000 foot view of immigration and this whole American ideal, right? So if you remember the history, the Pledge of Allegiance was come along early 20th century. This was right about the time that, they're trying to integrate all these different Europeans. And so what was going on then was people were encouraged to drop their individual European identities. Forget that you're Irish. You're not Irish anymore. You're not German. You're American, right? One nation under God, okay? Even though the traditional word nation didn't mean just a government of people. It was an ethnicity. That comes from the Greek in the New Testament, ethnos. And in the Old Testament, Hebrew, it's goyim. But it's a group of people that share genetic qualities, right? So the whole idea was to erase their individual European identities and replace it with this loyalty to America, this pledge to America, to the American empire. Now, I think that was a setup. Now, I can't exactly say how exactly it was planned, and maybe I can name some names, but it really looks to me like, as I observe it, it was a setup for the 65 Immigration Act, which followed the Civil Rights Act, all things which I would say were engineered, and there were nefarious people behind that. But in the same way that the Europeans were to drop their identity and we're just all Americans now, that's what I think they were trying to do with all these various different peoples from all over the globe that they're bringing in America, is to give them a sense of American identity, loyalty to the American empire, and to sort of wash their culture. And you want to get biblical view on this? This is the new Babylon, I think. I think that we're witnessing the new Babylon. You had the Kalergi plan, we can mention as well. This together with the Alexander Dugin's Eurasianism, and you get this perfect storm of a global empire with one religion, one culture, one language, and they worship one God. But which God? Which God? I would argue Satan. I would argue this is getting into Final Empire, Mark of the Beast territory. And I can step back and I can say, well, Satan's in control of this, but all of these different players, whether it be the Jews, whether it be the British, whether it be these the Rockefellers, all of these different players in this are all compartmentalized, and they don't always talk to one another, and they all play their parts. So as Chris was mentioning, it's really hard to pinpoint exactly where this stuff is coming from. We're up on the break now, back on the other side.
Hold my body down. There ain't no grave. Hold my body down.
When I... You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite. here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
A place where we can raise a family. I'll come back for you.
You've been running with the devil and it ain't no lie. Living in the shadows of the pale moonlight. She's been running with the angels everyone could see. God fearing church going honestly. Silver-tongued devil swept her off her feet. Promised her the world just to steal her dreams. He knew it was coming, it was his last night. Lord, when they caught him, should have heard him cry. Good Lord willing, in the creek don't rise. Town folk hollering, hang them up high. Sin is sin in the good Lord's eye, and the hangman's waiting just to watch you die. Dead man walking. Dead man walking. He said, I didn't do it, now that's the truth. Tell me how I could have, cause there ain't no proof. Said, boy, we ain't no fool. You're gonna meet your maker at the end of that noose. Good Lord willing, in the creek don't rise. Town folk hollering, hang them up high. Sin is sin in the good Lord's eye, and the hangman's waiting just to watch you die. Dead man walking. Dead man walking. To the gallows, you could hear him say, baby girl, promise it'll be okay. She begged and pleaded, said you have to wait.
The lawman said, girl, you're way too late. Good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. Town folk hollering, hang them up high. Sin is sin in the good Lord's eye, and the hangman's waiting just to watch you die. Good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. Town folk hollering, hang them up high. Sin is sin in the good Lord's eye, but you might have got it wrong if the hangman cries.
Welcome back. Welcome me back, good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. We'll have internet. I'm still in the frozen tundra, so I think we have outages from time to time. I think that's what happened. Anyway, we're back, bottom of the second hour, and what I was trying to say when we came back from the last break was I said previously, Jeremy in Kentucky, my special guest is Jeremy from Kentucky, words matter, so... officially, Jeremy from Kentucky. I was on In Plain Sight last night with you, your broadcast, 9 to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network, obviously. And I think we always have interesting discussions. This one has drifted into more, say, of a political nature. But the thing that I think is always interesting is it has at least a biblical undertone. And I think that's important, you know. Like I have said here and there and wherever, I think that without that, you don't really properly see or understand what's going on. And I think that in my estimation, the points that you're making about Alexander Dugin and the alt-right and all of that, for example, really underscore that point.
When we lost you, I did bring it back to a biblical perspective. I had a little bit of a monologue. Let me just give you the quick down and dirty on it.
Yeah.
So I was looking at immigration from a 40,000-foot view. In the same way that Europeans were told to drop their European identities and meld into this American worship, this American empire, pledging allegiance to it, that was a setup for the 65 Immigration Act, which undid the National Origins Act. And now you're bringing in the same way that Europeans are to drop their Irish, German heritage. Now, it's a blending, and I was bringing it into the New Babylon, Daniel 2, the Fourth Kingdom, the beast with feet of clay mixed with part of iron, and that all of this is to, working in conjunction, the clergy plan and the Eurasian plan, all of this working in conjunction to blend us all into one. One ethnicity, one language, one God. Which God? Of course, that would be the God of this world. So I did bring it back to the biblical sort of viewpoint there. And so I guess I would say as a Christian, I push back on all of this immigration, not out of any kind of hatred, but I see what's going on. I see the end game of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so the thing that I was going to try to circle back around to was the Kissinger quote back in 2011. Henry Kissinger made the statement, the center of gravity of world affairs has left the Atlantic and moved to the Pacific and Indian Oceans, which reminds me of Brzezinski setting up the Trilateral Commission. European unity has progressed substantially. It has also accelerated a change in the perception regarding the legitimate exercise of national power that started with the experience of the two wars. I just keep sort of looking at all of the things that are going on in and around the Middle East, and kind of the peripheral countries and discussion. And it seems to me, when I look at the new Silk Road and I see that China's committed $1 trillion to it, and I see the port city of Neom in Saudi Arabia, that's a $500 billion commitment, I believe is what they said. And, all of the things along that route that seem to correspond to our involvement in the Middle East and the Yunnan plan, Greater Israel, Eretz Israel, but even the Greater Middle East stuff, it all coalesces there. But that also is you know, that has a patently biblical or eschatological component. Speaking of that area.
That Belt and Road Initiative is, that's the chokehold, is right there in your Israel, Iran, Ukraine area, you know, for trade. And as the power shifts over to Eurasia, we see biblical prophecy lining up. Daniel 11, Daniel compares the Antichrist conquest in the Middle East to Antiochus Epiphanes' conquest of the Middle East, because Antiochus sought to control that whole area too, what we call the Greater Israel area. Mm-hmm. And there was the fight between the king of the north and the south and whatnot. So yeah, it's lining up for that. You know, mm-hmm. How long will it be? I don't, who knows? 10 years? Yep. 20?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff. There was one thing that I wanted to throw out and maybe get your perspective on this. Speaking of the, I don't know, the Masonic history of America. I don't know if this is fitting, but maybe it is. It reminds me, the Dugin discussion reminds me of this. We sort of talked about this a little bit, I think, in the after show last night, how Christian is America, the Masonic and fraternal signboards on the outskirts of just about every town in America. Like you said, that statue, the new Colossus of Rhodes, is pretty interesting. It's a very androgynous statue. Speaking of those things happening in America, is that a new thing? Is the androgyny a new thing? Well, if I could just run through a quick history deal. Let's see. From Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, 1872, Volume 2, M through Z. Let's see. The moral law is what I'm looking at. And this gets back to the whole, you know, this is a broader discussion, but the laws of nature and nature's God. From Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. Moral law. A Mason, say the old charges of 1722, is obliged by his tenure to obey the moral law. Now, this moral law is not to be considered as confined to the Decalogue of Moses, within which narrow limits the ecclesia. And, you know, this is a lot of this is probably, I mean, it's obfuscative language intentionally, but if people can sort of kind of read between the lines, it's pretty self-explanatory, I think. The Decalogue is the Ten Commandments, for example, within which narrow limits the ecclesiastical writers technically restrain it. In other words, we're not going to be restrained by that. You know, this is the presumption is those are superfluous restraints, which we know as Christians to be erroneous. Continuing, but rather as alluding to what is called the lex naturae, or the law of nature. The law of nature has been defined by an able but not recent writer on this subject to be, and I don't know who this is, but I'm curious to know who it is. Quote, the will of God, I wonder if it's Spinoza, for example, the will of God relating to human actions grounded on the moral differences of things, and because discoverable by natural light, obligatory upon all mankind, end quote. Oh, I guess that it's Grove, System of Moral Philosophy, Volume 2, page 122, London, 1749. That's who it is. Mackey spells it out. That's who it is. You just got to read. You got to be smart enough to read. That's all. This is the moral law, quote unquote, to which the old charge already cited refers and which it declares to be the law of Masonry. That's interesting. The law of Masonry is the moral law, is the natural law, essentially. And this was wisely done, for it is evident that no law less universal could have been appropriately selected for the government of an institution whose prominent characteristic is its universality. Is America steeped in the concept of universality? Anyway, so that's Mackey's Encyclopedia, there's an article that people can find on the web titled Natural Law, The Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. There's some stuff there, including an excerpt from Reuben Swinburne Clymer's Ancient Mystic Oriental Masonry. And I just want to throw out this little bit, and maybe we can talk about this after this, but then there's one other thing. Speaking of Clymer and his FRC, Fraternitas Rosae Crucis affiliation, he wrote a lot about a guy named Paschal Beverly Randolph, who was a bizarre figure. I don't know if we'll have time to mention that, but I just want to throw this out real quick. This little excerpt from Clymer's Ancient Mystic Oriental Masonry, speaking of, you know, the laws of nature and nature's God. So if the natural law, the moral law, is the Masonic law, what does that portend for Christians? Well, Clymer spells it out. The end of page 9 through the beginning of page 11 in Clymer's Ancient Mystic Oriental Masonry. 99 Masons out of every 100, and this corroborates what Manly P. Hall wrote, by the way, in The Secret Destiny of America, for example. 99 out of every 100, 99 Masons out of every 100 would laugh at the occult science, and yet, were it not for the occult fraternities, Masonry could never have existed. The secret doctrine, Blavatsky, anyone, was a universally diffused religion of the ancient and prehistoric world. Proof of its diffusion, authentic records of its history, a complete chain of documents showing its character and presence in every land, together with the teaching of all the great adepts, exist to this day in the secret crypts of libraries belonging to the occult fraternities. The Rosicrucian fraternity, more than any other, is to be thanked for keeping the secret and sacred writings intact. Although the individual members of this fraternity have been persecuted in many lands and during all centuries, the order or fraternity as such, which I would argue goes back to Genesis 11 at least, has never been persecuted, nor has there been any interruption. This fraternity, therefore, has been able to continue without interruption the teachings of the secret doctrine and ancient mysteries. No matter what the order, whether Masonry or Mystic Masonry, no matter the name, it has always been found that Rosicrucians had the work in hand. History proves this. It cannot be successfully denied. And none but those who are ignorant try to deny it. And then, but here's the you know, punchline for the, you know, is this, how does this line up with, you know, biblical Christianity, which is redundant. Every soul must work out its salvation, quote unquote. Salvation by faith and the vicarious atonement were not taught as now interpreted by Jesus, nor are these doctrines taught in the exoteric scriptures. They are later and ignorant perversions of the original doctrines. In the early church, as in the secret doctrine, there was not one Christ for the world, for the whole world, but a potential Christ in every man. Theologians first made a fetish of the impersonal, omnipresent divinity, and then tore the Christos from the hearts of all humanity in order to deify Jesus, that they might have a God made peculiarly their own. Masonry does not teach salvation by faith, nor the vicarious atonement. Go through its degrees, study the history as taught by the great masters, and you cannot find that it teaches this doctrine. And here's the rub. Boldly do I claim, Clymer writes, boldly do I claim that this doctrine does not make Christians, but it does make criminals. The reason for this is plain. All the ancient mysteries had the true doctrine, and so had the early Christians. Masonry, before it was contaminated by the disciples of Loyola, the Jesuits, it's those darn Jesuits, had it also. It is for Masons to bring out the good and the true from the rubbish. So that's an interesting little bit.
And to draw it all together, this Masonic moral law, a law of nature,
Yeah.
Very ambiguous. Who decides who's in charge? Seen in the Enlightenment, the Age of Enlightenment, or the Age of the Lightened One, Lucifer.
Yep.
And then written into the American Constitution. It was the ideology of the founders. You can see it in the post-French Revolution, and culminating in what we have today.
And
this law, it's ever-changing.
Yeah, it's mutable. God is not mutable. His law is not mutable. Jesus did not come to abolish it, but to fulfill it. And yeah, this thing is mutable. Where is it headed? And, you know, you could throw in the Age of Reason, obviously. Well, doesn't your Bible say, you know, doesn't God say in Isaiah 1, come now, let us reason together? Yeah, but I think it's a rhetorical, it's sort of evidence of God's sense of humor. He's the only one who can. And the only way we can is through him.
Agreed, definitely.
Again, like as I mentioned yesterday, speaking of the Masonic crowd and the Gnostic crowd in particular, they worship Solomon as the wisest man on earth, and they want to pursue the same wisdom and knowledge, but they seem to forget conveniently where the wisdom came from. God was the one who said, ask anything of me, and I will give it to you, and he asked for wisdom. Came from God.
Exactly. And that's the pushback on it. Did God really say you can be his gods?
Yeah.
Kind of. That's the law of man. That's the law of nature. You can be his gods. You can decide. You can set up your own government. You can rule yourself.
Yeah. And if we're honest with ourselves about Americans, this is the inconvenient reality that we face, because America is the bastion of that. It's the, you know, this is the incubator of that. Speaking of coming out of the, you know, the age of you know, monarchical rule, so to speak, and now we have the new divine right of kings. I think that James Corbett did a fascinating deal with his Big Oil series on that, and that new divine right of kings was, I think, born out of that Illuminized impulse that had the 6 points that wanted to destroy all monarchy and organized governments as a way to, you know, out of order chaos, or out of chaos order, I mean, to create the new order of the ages. And Novus Ordo Seclorum, if I didn't know better, I'd say there was symbolism everywhere that was telling us this. I don't know.
Could even go back to the Magna Carta if we're going to do that.
Absolutely. Man, we're definitely tipping sacred cows.
Hey, as a Kentuckian, I'm all for some cow tipping, son. Get our Bud Lights and our pickup trucks. Let's go out at midnight.
Let's do it.
Push them Bessies over.
Yep. Get your shoulder into it.
your call on this, I'm open for callers if you are. It's up to
well,
you.
Well, you got more to do it. We're running out of time, but I don't know if you want to, if you have time, I mean, if you're not busy tomorrow, we could continue it tomorrow too. I think it would be fascinating stuff. Whatever your schedule permits, if you have time, we could.
I definitely will the first hour. I may be interrupted in the second hour, but definitely the first hour.
All right. Well, let's. Why don't you want to plan on it?
Yeah, tomorrow. Okay. First hour.
Tomorrow, first hour for sure. We'll see what happens from there. But, and you know, the other thing, there were a couple of things. I forgot what the other one was. But, you know, speaking about the immigration deal, to your point, there are a couple of things I could say about this. Jefferson, I've been thinking about the duplicity of language and, you know, the way that these guys say things that doesn't repudiate something entirely. They seem duplicitous about stuff. So when Jefferson's talking about immigration, is it this is how to do it? And the rest, you know, the naive don't want to assume that he would have nefarious intentions, so we won't impute that negative to him. And at the same time, you know, whatever, maybe I'm wrong there, but you know, to your point about the immigration, if we look back, and again, if we confront our own history, weren't we the illegal aliens, you know, the European settlers? I mean, the point is, it's a rinse and repeat. We're getting the same thing done to us that we were a part of. And so if we can step back and see the bigger picture, aha, what's going on? Who's actually orchestrating this?
It's a classic case of God is going to use Babylon to punish Israel, and then he's going to turn around and punish Babylon. Mm-hmm. You know, we were brought in here, and if you want to look at God's sovereignty, right back to last night, you know, yeah. Europeans were brought over here, I believe, as a punishment on the inhabitants of the land. And then now he's turned around and punished us for our, and is in the process of punishing us. We are under judgment. It's not that we're going to be. We are. You know, we have women and children and trannies and homos ruling over us.
Well, that's, you know, that's direct.
Is there any other way to be? But seriously, we have foreigners ruling over us. We're, you know, we don't have representation. I mean, that's God's judgment on us. And all of this social degradation is evidence of that. Romans 1.
In Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, we see choices. God says, if you, I will. If you don't, here's what will happen. And I think what you're talking about is evidence of that. So back to the choice. We have choices, and the big problem, I think, is that we're wringing our hands in America, pretending that the choices that we make don't have consequences, especially for folks who want to call themselves Christians.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the music. That'll do it for today's broadcast. Jeremy, thank you for coming on, and I look forward to it tomorrow. Thanks for last night.
Thank you, man.
I guess we missed Renee. Renee, sorry about that. I apologize. And I hope it was informative and perhaps even edifying. Please pray for one another and support the network. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
People who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.